You are listening to the one and only Visionaries Wrestling Network, envisioning excellence and providing your perfect podcast experience.
Right, I'm Matt.
And I'm Alex.
And this is a very special edition of the Game Junkie Podcast. In today's episode, me and Alex will be conducting our first proper interview we've done since EGX, and we'll be doing that with the Branching Narrative team regarding what was on my game list of 2019, and if it had come out last year, Alex had said it would have been as well, but I went based on purely on the early build at EGX we played. He was going to hold off, and it'll probably make his list this year, so I can't use it this year. He can. He'll put in hands down with that. So, before we get to that, though, Alex, what have you been playing recently, buddy?
Well, recently, I jumped back into Star Wars Jedi Fallen Order because they've recently had a new update, and it's quite a good update, really. It's added a new battle grid system. It's done bug fixes. It's also added the red lightsaber, which is probably one of my favourites.
Just a little bit. Red's my favourite colour, but I also know it's the colour of a Sith, Alex, so that's not good.
I'm a big fanboy when it comes to Star Wars. Probably bigger fanboy than any other game I have.
Well, that's fair enough. Okay, so you've been playing that, obviously.
I've been playing a huge amount of Animal Crossing because since Matt's last visited my island, it's been completely demolished and rebuilt.
He has been playing a lot of it, but in fairness, I think the whole world has been playing a lot of Animal Crossing, to be brutally honest. Not as a bad thing, of course.
And that's more or less it, really. And of course, Death Trap Dungeons.
Death Trap Dungeons has been taking up some of my time as well, for obvious reasons. Animal Crossing for me has been a big plus for me, especially on some low days. It's just so chill. It's just nothing. Even if you don't want to do something some days, I mean, I know Alex is doing a lot of basically construction site. He's on his island most of the time. But even he must have moments where he's like, now just potter around and just do a few bits here there. And to be fair, even if it's a case of just picking up the branches on the paths and the weeds that are growing up, it's just so soothing. You can't get me to tidy my own flat up, but I'll have to go around and tidy my island up on that. Go figure. It's been a blast to play that game. Even if it is a case of trying to find the best turnip price on the stalk market, which you can find at Turnip Exchange and other places on the internet, sold one of mine this week for 326 a turnip, which I'm very happy with. Prices of mine have been rubbish this week, absolutely rubbish. Other games they're playing, been getting back into F1 a lot because the new 2020 game is out in about 5 weeks' time. Actually, it just drops. Including the 70th anniversary of F1 this year, which Alex's eyes are already rolling a little bit about. But even he's got me out of playing GTA, he likes F1 cars a bit more now.
Yes, I'll give it that. They're very nice cars.
Plus, Formula One, in their 70th year, also have been on the forefront of fighting the current pandemic by creating the fantastic ventilators which the health services around the world have been using. So Formula One, Project Pit Lane, they called it, leading by example. And that's by the by on that one. But yeah, F1 2020, I have it already pre-installed, already pre-ordered. I've gone for the Schumacher edition, which is probably, I respect Schumacher. Didn't like him personally as a driver, but I have respect for the man. But he, because of that, I'll go back and play F1 2019 with full sim damage, which is interesting. I've also been playing some FIFA because Alex hates it. What else have I been playing? Played a bit of Skyrim yesterday, actually. Well, time recording. Played a bit of Skyrim just to see how much I could mess up a character with the amount of cheats I've got unlocked for it. But if you don't play Skyrim mods, are you playing the game at all?
I don't think it's possible. I don't think I could, honestly, apart from the Switch edition, because I don't have a choice, I don't think I couldn't play the game without mods.
And that's the weird thing, isn't it? That's with most Bethesda games. If you're not using the mods, are you actually playing the game?
No, I mean, most of my mods, to be fair, are just graphic enhancers. But it's amazing the difference it makes. And I do have a lightsaber mod.
Yeah, it's always a good thing. I do like being able to cast Avada Kedavra at people. It's kind of fun. And that's actually a really nice segue, because Skyrim, of course, and that whole universe was inspired a lot by the Fighting Fantasy game books, which were created by Steve Jackson and Ian Livingstone, and Branching Narrative were the ones who brought that book to life in video game form. And what's coming next is our original interview at EGX, and then following that will be the interview we're conducting, well, present day, with Branching Narrative. And to close out the show, we're going to have our chat with Eddie Marsden. It's only a couple of minutes longer, that one, but my word, that was the best moment of our careers. Alex is smiling just talking about it now. And to be fair, so am I. So am I, to be fair, because a very proud moment it was for us. Anyway, see you on the side, guys.
Right, so Alex is now playing one of the games that I personally have enjoyed the most so far this weekend, Death Trap Dungeon. Now, I am joined by one of the developing team here. Who am I joined with?
I'm Mark Ripley. I'm the development director.
Couldn't get a better person for a job here, right? Okay, so Death Trap Dungeon is a book I idolised as a child. And by that, I mean, I think I've worn my copy out from how many times I played it. So when I heard it was coming to EGX as a game, and I was like, yeah, this is it going to be, I've got to play. I played it, and, well, Eddie Marsden does a fantastic job in the chair. So, for those of us who haven't played the Fighting Fantasy books, and who haven't played this game yet, tell us a bit about Death Trap Dungeon.
Okay, well, Ian Livingstone, back in the 80s, released a series of these books where he wanted to essentially make Dungeons & Dragons for people to play on their own. So he came up with books that described the location and then gave you options on where to go or whether to fight a monster. And by making a choice, you would then turn to another page, another paragraph in the book. You could also roll dice to see if you were lucky in certain situations or whether you managed to hit a monster, whether you managed to jump over a pit and things like that. So those books are now having a resurgence. There's lots of people who enjoyed them in the 80s. They've now got kids and they're now reading the books to their kids. The problem is, though, a lot of people have trouble reading. And with YouTube and Twitch and things, people don't really have the time or the inclination to read. So we thought, well, why not bring the books to that audience via something similar to Bandersnatch? We were developing this before Bandersnatch came out, but now that it has come out, it's really easy for us to say, oh, it's just like Bandersnatch.
The comparison.
Yeah, people understand what we're talking about now. And so we've got Eddie Marsden, who narrates the book and takes you through the dungeon. We also do the dice rolls. We've got nice 3D dice that appear on the screen.
They are beautiful.
And we also do, whenever people played the book, they had what we call the five-finger bookmark. So when you go to a new location...
Yes, I can relate to that. It was like six or seven in my case. Make a note of that page, go back to that one.
That's it.
I'm out of time. You're like, I don't want to make a mistake here.
But that's right.
You don't have that option.
You can't look ahead, but we've got a map that reveals itself as you travel through. And if you do die or make a mistake, you can then go back to any point on that route that you've been. But only where you've been.
I like that. So a true branching narrative.
Well, that's right. People cheat when they play the books, and we don't want to go against that.
Self-confessed.
Yeah. And so even when you're rolling the dice for your character at the very beginning, if you don't like a dice roll, we let you roll it again, you know, just as you would if you were playing the book.
But that's really cool how it usually is how you play the books. Now, why Eddie Marsan?
Eddie Marsan is very well known in America. We did have Brian Blessed. Now, Brian Blessed would be brilliant for this sort of thing, but he's only well known in the UK.
Yes.
So, another thing is about Eddie is even if you don't know his name or you don't realise what films he's been in, when you see his face, you say, I know him. I can't remember maybe where, but I know him.
Yeah.
So when we have when we release in the app stores and things like that, the icon for the game will be his face. Yeah, so it's automatically recognisable.
We will tweet the picture out of this. It's absolutely beautiful. It's just him pondering in the chair. It's absolutely brilliant. And it is, though. It's absolutely fucking awesome. I'm watching Alex play it from afar at the moment. So I don't want to give him any hints. But if Alex don't like a game, he gets up from it.
Right.
But he's been playing it for about 5-10 minutes now.
That's what we've found at the show. Everybody's been completely enthralled with
the,
it.
The voice makes the big difference.
That's right, yeah, it does.
And that's clearly what
draws you in.
Absolutely. I see you've got a little map to the side.
Yes.
I'm not sure that's a complete map.
It is. Of the entire dungeon.
I am not tweeting that one out, guys. I am not tweeting that one out. Okay, I will not be doing that. But I'll say, I drew many maps the child of this.
Yes, yes.
Now, the question I have here is, why Death Trap Dungeon being the first one?
Because it's the most popular.
Good answer. Very good answer. Because my first one in the series was called The Warlock of Firetop Mountain.
Yes.
And I played that back on the Spectrum.
Oh, wow.
I played that back on the Spectrum. And James, my brother, this is a little thing for you. One of the best parts about that game was, if you left it alone for too long, is they'd gone for a cheesecake. Yeah. Why would you put that in there if you didn't want to have it mentioned about 25, 30 years later? Fantastic. So, is there more scope for more of these games in the future?
Yes. We have an agreement for the next Fighting Fantasy book, and we're also talking to other Choose Your Own Adventure book authors that have suites of books. I can't mention them by name, but you can probably work out who they are.
We won't ask you to go any further than that. But as you've said, you've got another Fighting Fantasy book in play. Mm-hmm. I'd be stupid to not ask which one.
We can't say.
I know you can't say.
It will be one of the most popular ones.
I know you can't say. I will say, if it is the Forest of Doom, I will literally marry anyone who's in the way of me. Because that was one of my favourite ones. That was. And in any case, so it's out in December.
Yes.
And it's going to be on Windows, Mac, Android, iPhone and iPad. That's quite the launch catalogue, actually, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, we've designed it from the outset to be easily portable. So, we've already got... You obviously can't see this when on your audio, but we've already got the Android port.
Oh, the Android port is already ready to rock and roll.
It's already done, yeah.
And it looks beautiful. It does look beautiful, guys. I can't obviously show you that on audio format, but you guys, do you have a date in December for it to drop, or just December in general?
Yeah.
The great Cooper present then, guys. That's something you'll be getting on, definitely. And other formats in 2020, hopefully.
So that will be PS4, Switch, and Xbox One.
On Switch, it's going to be fantastic. Take it everywhere. Everywhere. Everyone wants to be on Switch. That's a lot about that. Okay, and so where can they get a hold of, if they want to follow you guys, and they should be, where should they follow you? Should they, websites?
There is branchingnarrative.com is the website where you can sign up for the mailing list to find out when we release. And there is on Twitter, we are branchingnarra, N-A-R-R-A. And we're also on Facebook and LinkedIn and, you know, everywhere else.
Absolutely fantastic. Thank you so much for taking your time. Matt and Alex, see you soon.
Me and Alex are joined very graciously today by Branching Narrative, who are the creators of Death Trap Dungeon, the video game. We are pleased to be joined by Mark Ripley and Matt Ball from Branching Narrative, thank you so much for being on the show. Me and Alex are both humbled for you to be here. And Alex, I believe you have the first question for the gentleman.
Yes, so what gave you the idea to pick Death Trap Dungeon?
So there's a number of reasons, really. It's kind of one of them was it was for me it was the first fighting fantasy game I ever played. It was, I mean, no, I can't remember when it was. You know, I'm quite old, so probably around the time it got released, I was bought it. I was quite a reluctant reader around that time. And I think my brother bought it for me and kind of chucked it at me and said, you might be interested in this. So that was one reason. Another reason is Ian will tell you that it is arguably the most successful of the books. Whether or not that's an actual fact, I've got no idea. But certainly, you know, we watch a lot of Twitter chatter about fighting fantasy games, and it's almost always in people's top two or three. So when we were doing a research about whether or not to do one and how to do one and which game to do, that was one that was always in the lists. And it's the one that has been positively and negatively for us in some cases, has been the one that's been adapted more times than any other. So there's kind of recognizability, if that's even a word.
Yeah.
I'd say so. I can relate to that because when I was a child, it still got all the original old pencil writings and everything, and it's as bad as I am. And originally released in 1984, the year I was born, which says a lot about the game, but you're nowhere near that old, Matt. You're nowhere near that old, I'm sure.
I was about 14, I think, when it came. 15, hang on, 1984, I would have been 16.
You carry it very well, sir. You carry it.
Thank you very much. You're very kind.
You carry it very well. No, I absolutely agree on it's a.
Yeah.
That's a beautiful book. Much better state than mine is, I must admit.
Well, it's a newer one. I don't know where my original one's gone anymore. I've got two copies of it here. I can lean back and show you both. The difference between the two copies or this one is intact. This one, it's basically been torn to pieces.
Alex is looking a little bit sheepish because he hasn't got a copy on his desk to hand. But that is okay because that's something we're going to get to in a little bit. A wise choice in Death Trap Dungeon, definitely. Absolutely. Alex, you got a second question, I believe, to follow that one up with.
My biggest question, I think, is obviously Eddie Morrison is the narrator of this game. And I mean, he did an amazing job. So I was wondering, why did you choose him and how did this even come about to choose him?
I kind of did that, didn't I? So sorry, Mark, I'll do this one again, shall I? I'll leave it go in a minute. It was a number of things, really. There's a little bit of jingoism in there, just through kind of it's easier to talk to people you know than it is people you don't. And the background of it is that my brother is an actor. Timothy Spall is quite well known, and you ask the questions of people you know, right? So we'd never shot a video before, we'd never made any kind of video content before, but there was a need, a kind of a commercial need, if you like, to have a recognizable face on the product. And then once you get into kind of the world of recognizable faces, you get into this huge gamut of how much these people are going to cost to get in. So, I turn to the one resource I have that can tell me about these kind of things. And really, he kind of said, my brother said, is that the best thing to do is to talk to his agent, my brother's agent. And they represent a whole bunch of people, one of which is Eddie Marson. So then in what happens in a lot of cases in actors agencies is they have different people that deal with theatrical, so not only theatrical, I mean cinema and TV and stuff like that, and voiceover. Because what we were doing kind of fell very much into the kind of world of voiceover, kind of one person to screen rather than a production, so to speak. I spoke to the voiceover guy there, and actually really didn't have anybody particularly in mind at the time, and kind of just said, explained what it is we were looking for, and then he kind of threw a few names at me, one of which was Eddie. So I looked through kind of who they had and stuff like that, but I actually kind of looked at past work, but also again recognizability. And Eddie at that point, Eddie was the kind of co-star of what's that show called, Mark?
God, I've watched it all and I can't remember.
Ray Donovan, yeah. So he's the kind of was co-star of Ray Donovan. Unfortunately, it's been cancelled now. So it meant that there was a lot of his face in different places. So it kind of, and then kind of historically, it turns out he's been in one of my favourite films, which is The Disappearance of Alice Creed. Played a really unpleasant character in that, which seems to be a part of his repertoire, because he's played a few unpleasant characters. But actually, in general, he's got a good face for fantasy. But is a consummate professional. He's not only is he an astonishingly good actor, he's also on recommendation one of the nicest people you could ever meet. So consequently, that kind of mixture of proper professional delivery, kind of really wanting to be part of it, and he was asked whether or not he was interested, and I don't think he was ever really a player of game books, but was aware of them. He's the same age as us, same age as Mark and me, so he kind of existed in the same world, existed at the same age and would have been aware of them, so kind of showed some interest. So I sent him a book. He was filming in Los Angeles at the time that he said he was interested in doing it. So I couriered him a copy of Death Threat Dungeon over. In fact, that one I showed you, and he played it with his kids just to find out really what it was and kind of to understand it. I've got a couple of photos of him kind of holding the book and with a copy of the adventure sheet, like a hand drawn version of the adventure sheet out in front of him.
Yeah.
And he was just really up for it. So it's kind of, everything sort of fell into place really, and it just worked out really well.
Sounds a little like a dream come true.
Really.
As you do say, it's not what you know, it is who you know. And when we had the privilege of briefly meeting the man himself at EJ last year, we can vouch for what you said, that he's one of the nicest men we've ever met. And slightly starstruck we were at the time, but he was the nicest man in the world. One of the biggest questions for me, because obviously being such a huge fan of it growing up, was when you were creating the game itself, were you tempted to change any of the classic story, or was it crucial to remain faithful to the original piece?
Oh no, we didn't change anything. Well, we were at Fighting Fantasy Fest just before EGX, and we met several characters who were most insistent that we kept to the book, and we kept to the letter of the book. And we daren't deviate, and several people came up to us and said, oh, this version of the game, they did this, they changed this, you can't do that. So we were very aware that we had to keep. But at the same time, we wanted to make it accessible to a wider audience, so we put lots of things in there that you could cheat. And in the reviews since, people have said, you can cheat in this. You've got save points. You can roll the dice as many times as you like, and if you don't like the character, this will not do. So there's some very, very, strict people out there who take it very seriously.
Everyone, I don't care who they are, everyone who says, mate, that you don't cheat these games, if they're saying they don't cheat, they're lying bastards. Everyone's cheated at a Fighting Fantasy rulebook. The Five Finger Bookmark comes to mind.
Absolutely.
That was reloading your game before it was a thing.
Mm.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and it's the only thing. The only thing we don't, and you know, one, it was interesting that why we were developing it. There was the Click 1000 episode that Ian was in, and had a whole section in it about Fighting Fantasy with Ian talking about it, and bringing out the Five Finger Bookmark. Yeah. And then the presenter guy talking about. He was very much talking about looking ahead, kind of leaving your finger in there, looking at both choices and making those choices. And we thought really hard about whether or not there was a way we could do that too. But actually, we kind of thought that essentially laying a very verbose crumb trail, letting people re-roll, which it's kind of what I didn't want to do was punish people. For having a bad roll. It's kind of like, you've rolled a good skill, you've rolled a reasonable stamina, then you roll a terrible luck. What we didn't want to have to do was kind of make people play that, because it becomes a kind of unsatisfactory experience. It's kind of, it becomes too hard, and really the nature of the way the gameplay works means that hard difficulty is dictated by your rolls. Not only as you build your character, but also as you play the game.
Yeah.
It's one of my favorite things I ever heard at a conference, was probably 20 years ago now. Was a guy, I can't remember his name, something Veitch, something like that. He's one of the guys that started PopCap, and he was one of the original crew that designed Bejeweled, that mechanic that is in pretty much every puzzle game now. And he made a very good point that I've always kind of lived by, and my kind of the remaining career I've had after that, is that no game has ever failed because it was too easy. But many have failed because they're too hard.
And Death Dragon is hard.
Yeah.
And Death Dungeon is the most vicious, I would say, of all the Final Fantasy books. So kind of, we just want people to be disappointed with it, or we don't want people to have to kind of have to keep replaying or whatever. It's kind of, you just, and the idea is with things like the allowing someone to re-roll at the beginning, they're only cheating themselves. There's nobody standing by you judging you when you do that. If there is, then listen to them. It's kind of, but it's ultimately just your choice as a player. You're only It's like when you're playing a quiz, like getting your phone out and looking an answer up. You're only cheating. Well, you're cheating at the quiz at that point, but really you're just cheating yourself.
Absolutely. In terms of difficulty level, I think Alex relates to that. I think you got all the way. Spoilers ahead a little bit there on this one. Alex got always the end and would realise that he was missing something and therefore didn't win the game. So he was very annoyed about that.
I missed the emeralds.
But I wasn't going to tell him otherwise, because I've played this game multiple times, but I've forgotten half of the stuff.
Something that interested me a bit was what gave you the idea to have two different battle systems.
Again, it was coming back to the playability thing, in that if you remember, Death Trap Dungeon came out in 1984, and the game mechanics, even in just video games in 1984, were brutal. So. And that, and the when you turn the game into a video and you've got the battle rounds over and over again, it can get a bit monotonous. So I think it was Matt's idea. Came up with just shortening it to three rounds, just for the modern audience, because I don't think modern players, and we saw that in some of the reviews as well, they didn't realise that it was based on a book. from all those years ago. And so they were applying, you know, today's gameplay on expectations, you know, on that game. And so, you know, they were saying, you know, this is too hard. This, why haven't we got this? Why haven't we got pretty pictures of daggers and all the items in your inventory? So, so yeah.
That was, yeah, I mean, that was part of it. It was also, it came from discussions, some discussions with Ian as well. I mean, one of Ian's points about how we were going to implement it was how we were going to streamline the battles. You know, he admitted and made that point about modern audiences. And also the fact, you know, the fact that we're not necessarily trying to appeal directly to the to a fighting fantasy purist, and you know what do we do? Because it's especially as you get later in the game, you get, you know, the kind of the pit fiend and the manticore, you know, these kind of the creatures that you come up against later in the game, and also when you're fighting dual enemies, for want of a better expression, you know, they're going to kick your ass. So it's kind of what do we do to make the gameplay flow a little better? What do we do to not kind of back players into corners that the original book did, but still kind of be in there where there's some not necessarily a challenge, because ultimately, you know, you're not, you're always subject to the roll of the dice. But what do we do to kind of to build a level of jeopardy in the game still, where, you know, you can lose up to, I think it was his six, well, if you're doing three rounds, you can lose up to six stamina, which can still be damaging, especially later on, which, you know, no spoilers. But it's, you know, and the kind of, we looked at what you lose in fights across the whole game. I mean, we did a ton of studies, and I built a kind of I built a fight simulator in Excel. Kind of round, to understand the number of rounds that you go through to fight things. And yeah, I mean, the three round thing makes the game easier. But again, I'll go back to my statement, which is no game has ever failed because it was too easy. Ultimately, if someone's in a position where they can play the game from beginning to end the first way through, one, congratulations, you've worked out the right way. But secondly, it's kind of it's not about stopping the player finishing or playing through the game. You know, there are dozens, hundreds of different ways you can play through Death Trap Dungeon that will mean you can and can't finish the game. But ultimately, it's about the experience. It's about the journey, not the destination.
I definitely agree about the journey. I mean, amount of times I've made mistakes. I mean, it's literally one of the first entries in going along the corridor. Remember the first time I cut that spongy rock open. I cut a spongy rock open. And I remember that. I'm like, you don't do that, but you do that. Because we're all human. We all have that curiosity. And even if you've forgotten it years later, you still remember, you still do it.
But you know, when I was putting the script together, I put a save game just before it anyway. So it's kind of, you know, really, I've lost two stamina for that happening. You know what? I'll just reload. I'll listen through it one more time. To be honest, you can skip anyway. Mm-hmm. So, you know, go back to your save game, skip over it, listen to the other one. That's almost like the look ahead. Then, you know, you're kind of looking at one section and turning back and looking at the other. Yeah, we watched the way people play the game. We understood the way that people play the original games, and we let them do it, you know.
And that's not a bad thing, in my personal opinion. I'm pretty sure Alex would agree on that one. But did any of the feedback, I mean, I'm guessing some feedback from, especially when EGX, because when we were there, we played the build that you had there, which was, and I'm going to say it, flawless. We didn't have a single problem with it. It's pretty much exactly how it was in the final game. It was stunning. Did any of the feedback you got from EGX affect the game going forward from that point, or was it pretty much a case of you knew on the right track?
It was there was a bunch of stuff really at EGX. It was kind of watching the way people clicked around, watching the way people, you know, we didn't have a map. You couldn't do that. There was no explanation about the fighting. People just dived in and kind of just took it as it was. I don't know which, I can't remember what days you were there, but certainly we went through three versions of that game in the 3 days of the show. It was being changed every day. And thank you for the flawless comment, but obviously you didn't play it and find the outtake that I left in one of the videos. So you know, there was a whole long video of Eddie sort of turning to the side and talking to me about something, which I edited out on the next day. But it was nevertheless, a couple of people found it while they were watching it.
I didn't find that one. I played the one on the Thursday. Alec played the one on the Sunday.
Right. So I think you were just lucky, because there were a couple of crash bugs in there as well later on as well. But it was but again we kind of. The nature of the way we've built the engine means that it's really very easy to update this sort of stuff, because it's just a bunch of, you know, the things like the script is just, it's a text file. What did we learn? It's kind of, well, really, we kind of watched the way people were playing it. What we saw, which we were really surprised about, was the level of attention that it was given. We really didn't know what to expect, and this was the thing. We kind of, you know, we did this project knowing that there was a love for the product and a love for the genre, and then, you know, then we used some other techniques around kind of getting a known face, making sure it's a known title, etc. And what we saw was kind of two things. One is we had the sound on really loud, so that kind of attracted people's attention. But people would walk around where our stand was, which was a little bit hidden in the show, and they'd hear someone reading in the story, and they'd kind of look towards the sound, then look up and look at the giant poster that was above it, then look at the title of the poster, and then they'd do one of two things. They'd either smile, and kind of you'd see a kind of a recognition across their face of you know, someone that's clearly played the book, and then they'd look and they'd stop and they'd wait and really pay attention to the game, sometimes sit down and play it, or they'd just kind of look away because there was no recognition whatsoever and no interest. So what we noticed was there was a real binary reaction to it, either absolute love for the title and what we'd done for it, or complete apathy, no hatred, no kind of grief. You know, the other thing we saw, which was kind of interesting, was the this kind of the community, not the community around the game, but the community that would kind of grow around somebody playing the game. Yeah. You know, somebody would be sitting playing it, and you'd get recognition, and slowly but surely, a small crowd of five or six people would appear around them, not necessarily together, they didn't know each other. But actually, you know, because the nature of the game is there aren't really any really long sections in there. There are decision points really regularly, and the people that were standing behind them would proffer an opinion,
yeah,
about what was going on, and they'd argue about, you know, they'd talk about it, they'd argue about what the differences were, and they'd argue about which was the best choice, and people would just start talking to each other, didn't know each other. And that was a really interesting point. Certainly helped us, not necessarily the way that we continued to build the game, but certainly the way that we communicated when we released it.
Brilliant.
What's next, really, for Branch and Narrative?
Mark, go on. You can do this, Mark.
What's next? Well, we are now busy reapplying the engine to lots of different things. How much can we say?
Well, we don't want you to get in trouble for anything, obviously. So if you can't say certain things, then don't say. It's fine.
All right. So Branching Narrative is a business. It is ultimately a business, right? It's, yeah. Sure. And I make no excuses about the fact that it's a business. We at the moment, it's predominantly me and Mark. That's it. you know, and what you see in Death Threat Dungeon is a production of probably 95% just us two. You know, the shoot, the edit, the shoot was a crew of people. You know, we worked with we took an artist on to do the UI for us. But ultimately, you know, the nine odd months it took to make it is Mark and me. And we funded the development of it as well. You know, there's no publisher in the background. There's nobody doing it. So it was a labor of love and I think it drained both our bank accounts. So you know, we do intend to do more game books. You know, Ian likes what we've made, and so you know we would like to do more games. I mean, I've already cut the spine off another one of the books and scanned it all in and OCR'd it and stuff. So we've actually got another book ready electronically to start being dropped into the engine. That, you know, probably within a relatively short amount of time we could put together a shoot script for it. But the issue with those kind of things is they are expensive to do. So, you know, we're in a position now where the game is selling now, and we kind of need to see from that what we can afford to do going forwards.
Absolutely.
But the other important thing, and certainly when we were building the game, there is prior work to Death Trap Dungeon. And it's, you know, it's not available. You can't see it anywhere. But you know, kind of the seed, if you like, what we've made came from another interactive video product that we did for a PR business, 18 months ago, 2 years ago now. And it was when that was built, you know, we very early on thought about multiple implementations of this engine. So you know, what we're doing now, we are in the process now, we have scripted, built, shot, edited, and are now in alpha with another game. But it's one that we're going to release for free. It is going to be ad funded as opposed to paid for, and it is ultimately a quiz game. You know, it felt like a natural progression for us to go from something epic like Death Trap Dungeon, which, you know, is 5 hours of video. It took 2 days to shoot, 3 days to shoot, sorry, yeah. Months to edit, months to get ready, and at the same time develop the engine. And it's but what's been particularly interesting around this time, and you know, we've spoken to a number of people about what's been going on and you know, the coronavirus crisis. Yeah. We shot this during the crisis, right? So it's kind of the woman that's reading out is Sian. It's a friend of mine. She lives down in Brighton, and it was shot in a spare room in her house against a green screen that I sent her, so for her to set up and stuff. So it's kind of so as opposed to kind of hacking the engine, if you like, hacking our own engine in order to put games into it, as well as hacking our own engine, we've kind of had to hack our production process, and kind of, if you like, kind of, you know, sort of in a guerrilla style. Work out how we can actually get this sort of stuff shot when you're not actually allowed to go in near anybody. So we've done that. But what it means is that the nature of nature of the adaption of the engine means that it's been done very very short notice and done in a very short amount of time because of the engine flexibility that we specified very very early on in the process has allowed us to do this. We're also looking at some other options as we go forwards in other areas, not necessarily games. And this is one of the things that we thought was quite important early on, is that while this engine can be used for full motion video games. There's a whole bunch of other opportunities in relation to it as well, things like training, healthcare, quizzes, and a whole ton of other stuff. And actually, you know, it's kind of even things like interactive catalogues, you know, God knows what else, advertising, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, it kind of in answer to your question, if you like, a lot of stuff and you know, some of those things there are some of the things that we're up to.
The future is bright for certain.
Sorry?
The future is certainly bright for your company, definitely.
Well, we hope so. You know, it's kind of, it's for want of a better expression, it's very easy to stand on a street corner handing out £5 notes. Mm-hmm. You know, you can be making games and not necessarily making any money out of them. But it's kind of being flexible and adapting to demands in the market is really one of the kind of core ethics, if you like, of the business is to be adaptable. And that, yeah, that kind of what we're doing now is just showing that we can do that.
I mean, and doing a fine job from what we saw there. Alex, you had one last question regarding Death of Dungeon, didn't you, on your sheet?
Yes, my final one was, do you see it come into other consoles like the Switch, for example?
I was just going to mention that. We are registered Nintendo, Xbox, PlayStation developers. So we have all the SDKs. I think, personally, I think it would probably work best on Switch.
We have similar opinions. We were talking about it off air that it seems to play. It just, in our opinion, anyway, it would work so much more because obviously you could use the Joy-Cons, roll a dice in fear if you wanted to. I don't know if it's a mechanic you can use in your architecture, but it certainly, in my opinion, has a lot more scope to be played with on the Switch.
Yeah. So it's just a case of juggling all these different opportunities, really, and deciding what we do and when. Because, you know, if there's only two of us.
We know that feeling very well. One thing we both can say is you've made huge fans out of, well, I was already a huge fan of it beforehand, but Alex is, bearing in mind, and I'm sure he won't mind me saying this, Alex has dyslexia. He's not great at reading. Because thanks to your game, he now wants to play the games. So your game has opened it up so much more to people who have trouble reading the books. So thank you very much for that. You guys
are... Oh, you're welcome. It was interesting. I know there's an anecdote that goes along with that, which is kind of when we first released the game. The proper release on all the formats. You know, I was engaging quite a lot with the, I still do, but was engaging quite a lot with the Twitterverse, people asking questions and stuff like that. And there was a guy talking about how he'd really wanted to introduce his daughter, youngish daughter, probably 5-6 year old daughter, to Final Fantasy games, but wanted to kind of be in a position where either he was reading it for her or having her read it as an early kind of reading thing. And he was concerned about the fact that there was, you know, there was dialogue and it would mean that she wouldn't read the book. Yeah, my thought around that was, well, fine, but just turn the volume down and turn the subtitles on. And straight away she's reading. You know, and it's kind of, and that kind of came from a lot of stuff going on where a lot of kids are being homeschooled and, you know, the kind of people were over and saying, oh, they're just watching the telly all the time. It's like, well, yeah, well, turn the sound down and turn the subtitles on. Then they're reading, and I think kind of following that message, he bought the game and you know, was sitting playing with her on the game, and both of them were having a ball.
I've seen on Twitter exactly that point. There's some amount of people on Twitter because obviously we follow you obviously on Twitter and everything, and we've seen where you've retweeted things and people playing the game together on desktop, on tablets, on phones. Having played it on desktop and handset, it plays equally well on both. So it's not like one is better than the other. It's just, well, it's brilliant. Yeah, so me and Alex did both give, we normally, when we do our reviews of games, we always give a review out of 10. We both gave a 9.5 out of 10. Now, the reason why I gave it a 9.5 is because I want more. otherwise, it'd be a 10.
Game is ever perfect.
This game was as close to perfect without being so.
Thank you.
So it's a great building block for you for the next one. When it comes, it'll be great, obviously. Alex, have you got any further words for the gentleman before I start waxing lyrical about their reviews, because they are glowing on ones I found on Twitter and Metacritic, etc.?
No, I'm out of questions.
Excellent. Okay. Well, one thing we will say is we obviously Death Stranding is out now, available from Steam, available on Google Play and on iOS. Alex, I believe you've got the prices to hand, have you?
It's $4.99 on Android.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same on iOS, I believe.
It is, I believe it is, right, yeah.
And on Steam, it was $11.99.
That's dollars, I believe, yes. Which I think is an absolute bargain for such an amazing game. Gentlemen, thank you so much for joining us on Game Junkies. Me and Alex, I speak for both of us. We are humbled to have you on, and we look forward to having you back on, hopefully in the future, when you bring out another game.
Yeah.
We'd love to come back.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Thank you very much to Mark Ripley and Matt Ball of Branching Narrative.
Okay, so Man Axe still here at Death Trap Dungeon. We are honoured to have on our pokey little podcast a true Hollywood superstar, Eddie Marson. Welcome to the show.
Hello.
This is the man providing the voice and the visuals for the game Death Trap Dungeon. I heard the first of all. What do you think of the game itself?
Well, I never played it when I was a teenager in the 80s, and then they gave it to me when they asked me to do it, and I played it with my four children in the summer, and I thought it was fantastic. What I love about it is it doesn't bombard you with imagery. It allows you to create the imagination yourself. It's kind of like an audio book with interaction.
It is.
And it's fantastic. And my kids loved it. They really got excited, and every time they died, the tension was unbearable. It was brilliant.
That is fantastic. I mean, it would best described as Dungeons & Dragons for single player, which is how I got into D&D in the first place. I'm a DM now and everything, and all because of this book.
Yeah, yeah.
And I mean, your voice is iconic. I was playing it briefly earlier on. I don't know what you thought about the book.
I think it's an amazing game. I mean, I never played the book. I never read the book, but playing the game now was brilliant.
Yeah, yeah. I'm glad you enjoyed it. Yeah, they said that they said that the response has been, people have been enthralled with it. They've been sitting there and they've gone through to the end, and there's been no, that they said that usually you have people giving criticisms of games, and they haven't given any. They just love it. They sit there and they think it holds their attention all the way through.
Part of that is definitely down to your good self, because it's the way it's read, and the fact that you, I mean, I'll ask for a little example of the voice, please, for example, sir.
Well, I don't know quite what I say, really. I haven't got the script.
Can I have a book for one moment, please, sir?
Can I have the book?
One moment, yes.
A brief example, if you'd be so kind.
So I say,
for example, if you get to chapter 131, for example.
The crossbow bolts fly over your head and thud into the opposite wall. Fortunately, you are still crouching on the floor. Now that the trap has been sprung, you can leave the room by the door through which you entered. Back in the tunnel, you head on west. Turn to 74.
Now that, how can that not encourage you to play a game, guys? This man is a legend. I do have my own words when I get starstruck like this. It's fantastic. I'm literally like that. For people who are idiots and haven't heard of your stuff before, what else have you been in, sir?
Oh, I've done, what have I done? Deadpool 2, Hancock, Hobson Shaw. I do Ray Donovan for American television. I've done Atomic Blonde. I've been all over the place.
You've been Equitable Strange, of course.
Jonathan Strange and Mr. Sherlock Holmes 1 and 2. Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell. Little Dorrit for the BBC. Oh, I pop up all over the place.
Have you got any product lined up coming up?
Yeah, we've got another season of Ray Donovan coming out soon. I've just done a film directed by Sean Penn that's going to come out.
Ooh.
And at the moment, I think that's it at the moment.
Alec, do you have any questions for the good man?
No, but it's a huge honour to meet you.
It's a pleasure to meet you, too. Glad to
see you. This is definitely the biggest moment for our podcast, having someone like you on our show. Thank you so much indeed.
Cheers.
Right, thanks for listening, guys. Listening through those two interviews and today's catch up with Branching Narrative. Alex, has always been a great pleasure to be alongside you, buddy, for that one. What have we got coming up? We've got more Dungeons & Junkies coming up next weekend. We've got the second part of the adventure with yourself, Kerry and Caitlin, with me getting derailed as usual as the DM. Mm-hmm. It's a blast doing that. You guys look forward to the second part of part four, effectively, but the second part of that adventure. And coming soon will be Chad from View from the Top Rope joining the Order. Very excited to have a fourth person in the party. And I dare say, in immortal words, what Chad said to me, the shit's going to hit the fan. I'm like, do your worst. I've already got Alex. So.
And I suppose it's also worth mentioning, we will get round to Fallout 76 very soon.
It is getting to the stage that we're thinking they're making it worse and worse and worse.
I think the hard part is trying to actually convince ourselves to play it.
We did play it for a bit, and to be fair, we did it in kind of an NPC, which was nice.
And my game crashed twice.
That's part of why I was not convinced to go back on again. But we will get to it at some point. And don't forget to check out Chris Talks Games again next week for the third and final part of the big lockdown quiz. It's, well, spoilers, I know how it goes. But you guys listen in next week, and don't forget to share your answers to @ChrisLewis37. He'd love to hear them. Right, Alex, we will be back then in 2 weeks. Want to take us out, buddy?
I'm Alex.
I'm Matt.
And we're out of here.
Boom.
This podcast is a Matatec production for the Visionaries Wrestling Network.